This is a podcast from meow.net.
Meow!
Hello and welcome. My name's Owen Kelly, and this is the fifth Friday of March 2024. There are 4 months in 2024 that have five Fridays. March, today, May, August, and November. Those of you who've been listening to us for a reasonable length of time will remember that we always have four different strands running. One on the first Friday, one on the second, one on the third, and one on the fourth. And on the fifth Friday, when that rolls around, we bring out an episode of an extra series that we call, coincidentally, Friday number five. And each year, we give Friday number five a specific theme. So in the past, we've had four music shows, each playing music released under Creative Commons licenses, or in other ways, with copyleft licenses or no copyright at all. Then we had a year in which we looked back at the golden age of US radio, noting the historical cultural differences. And we used episodes from primetime radio shows that are now out of copyright and available on Internet Archive. Last year, we celebrated our fifth anniversary of podcasting by looking inwards. We played four early episodes from Meanwhile in an Abandoned Warehouse for people who joined us recently and may not have heard them. This year, we're looking outwards. We're going to broadcast episodes of other podcasts that we listen to, with their permission, of course. Podcasts from friends and people we know, podcasts from people working in related areas, or podcasts from people who we admire or acknowledge for one reason or another as doing work that we like. We're going to start with something that we've already looked at, but we think's worth looking at again and again. We're starting with Ferment Radio, a podcast founded by Agnieszka Pokruka. We've looked at this twice already. When we began the Common Practice theme, the Common Practice series, which comes out on the fourth Friday of every month, in the very first episode, we looked at Ferment Radio. We talked to Agnieszka about what she was doing, about how Ferment Radio worked, and then we featured an entire episode, a conversation with Stephanie Moroni. Towards the end of 2021, we came back and talked to Aga about the 11th episode in the series, in which Tosca Turen discussed her collaborative work with Mushrooms. She and Mushrooms worked together to produce Fungi music. And we listened to that episode and heard some of the Fungi music. Now, Ferment Radio has now reached 41 episodes. And it's also become part of a new project that Aga has co-founded with Humberto Duque, and that project's called Super Eclectic. And it advertises itself as a multimedia production house for the world we want. They aim to produce media to turn complex topics into powerful stories that inspire hope and encourage action. Films, documentaries, podcasts, events, etc. So, we come back to Ferment Radio, and what we're going to do now is listen to episode 40, which is called Show Me Your Kitchen and I'll Tell You Who We Are. Sorry, it's not called that at all. It's called Show Me Your Kitchen and I'll Tell You Who You Are. And it features David Zilber. He says that we choose our tools and in return our tools shape us. Tools, he notes, can be an opening to new possibilities, but also a limitation. So what makes the workspace of a fermenter? What tools are there available? How do these tools influence the process? So in this episode, Aga sneak peeks into the kitchen of David Zilber, who's a chef, a fermenter, a food scientist, and the author of The Noma Guide to Fermentation. This is the second part of an interview with David Zilber, and the first part occurs in episode 36. Here we go then, we're going to listen to episode 40, and I'm going to place all the links you need to find Ferment Radio, the actual episodes, Super Eclectic, the episodes we've previously heard here, all in the show notes for this podcast. Happy listening.
Welcome to Ferment Radio, a podcast series that takes you deep into the fascinating world of microbes. My name is Aga Pokrywka, and I invite you to join us in a conversation with people from the most diverse backgrounds, including science, gastronomy, and arts, to develop new recipes for living on a broken planet. We choose our tools, and in return, our tools shape us. Tools can be an opening to new possibilities, but also a limitation. What makes the workspace of a fermenter? What tools are there available? How do these tools influence the process? In this episode, we sneak peek into the kitchen of David Zilber, chef, fermenter, food scientist, and author of the Noma Guide to Fermentation. Guided by David's voice and powered by imagination, we stroll around his lab at Christian Hansen in Hørsholm, Denmark. This is the second part of our interview with David Zilber. Check out episode 36 to learn more about the importance of little ferments in the big food system. When you cook at home, do you follow recipes
or never?
Okay.
Never.
And do you ferment at home?
Yeah, I do.
Why I'm asking is that follow similar ways of dealing with food at home and in your professional life, because in a way, food making for many people is something you just do at home, but for you it's both. So how much those two are kind of intertwined and impact each other?
I'll say that I've never cooked more at home since leaving restaurants. Like, I have always enjoyed to throw the occasional dinner party, you know, cook for my girlfriend on the weekends, whatever. But since leaving restaurants, I make dinner every night. And I just go to the market. I see what looks good at the veg stand. You know, I'll get a great cut of meat sometimes or some nice fish and come home and just cook what I want. I have this bad habit of like seeing food on Instagram, you know, I follow lots of food accounts, and I'll see like gajangmyeon from Korea, which is this the Korean version of like fermented black bean paste as like a stew. And I'll be like, oh, that looks good. I won't even like look up a recipe, and I'll just make it and be like, this is delicious. And then I'll look up a recipe and like, that was good. I wonder how it's actually made. I'll be like, okay, I was kind of close. And then I'll make it again, like properly. I have a bad habit of doing that, of just like winging it the first time and usually hitting kind of close to the mark. I do ferment at home, but it's usually a very steady rotation of only the things that I like eating on a regular basis. So I always have like 5 kilos of kimchi in the fridge. I always have a jar of pickles, of pickled jalapenos. I recently went on a trip to Bulgaria and brought back with me some amazing culture from raw milk that I've been propagating myself. And I've made really delicious kind of like yogurt ricotta. And yogurt quite regularly from it. I have like 2 liters on right now. And what else? And in the summertime, I brew coffee kombucha. And like occasionally I'll brew a kombucha here and there if there's like a fun flavor. I'm also constantly being sent like ferments to taste.
Oh yeah, okay.
That's another kind of funny, just like as like a fermented food influencer. But in terms of like more involved fermentation, I do that in the lab.
I wonder, could you give us a little tour around the lab?
Sure.
It can be or like an audio tour.
Yeah, but I'll paint a visual picture. Okay, so we are here in my laboratory, which is the ground floor of a small just three-story brutalist office building that I think was built in the 70s. Kind of at the same time as most of the buildings in this forest. And we are in a forest. I mean, we're looking out the windows right now, which go floor to ceiling on all sides. It's a bit like Bruce Wayne's Batcave in like the Dark Knight trilogy, where he's like looking out into like this lake and forest through his windows and Alfred comes in to scold him. It kind of feels like that. But we are on the Danish Technical University's science park. They own the land. They have a campus here. But then beyond just that campus, the rest of the land was turned into a science park for very forward-thinking companies. I mean, there's pharmaceutical companies here, Christian Hansen, companies that deal with, water treatment technologies and things like that. So we're kind of looking out into what's primarily a beech forest. There's some ferns right in front of our main window. And like I said, in this maybe, how big is this room? Like 100 square meters? Maybe a bit less. Right in the center, I have a giant stainless steel workbench with cabinetry underneath. And honestly, you could fit like six cooks working around this. There's some hardwood floors in kind of like the less busy areas of the room. And then some like industrial, non-stick, very easy to clean, like laminate floor in the kitchen workspace. I have kind of miniature versions of everything I've had in any fermentation lab I've ever worked in. Off in the corner, I have a stack of incubation and maturation chambers. I would have killed for these things at NOMA. When I was designing NOMA 2.0, I looked into what these incubation chambers would have run us. And for the quantity of koji that we would have had to have made, or any of the filamentous fungi, it would have been like $500,000 to keep up with production. So that dream evaporated pretty quickly. When I moved in here, not having to deal with production ever, I was able to opt for some cheaper, much smaller units that just allow me to basically make any environment on Earth. I mean, not any, but these will go up to like 90 degrees and down to like fridge temperatures. Beyond that, you're just in a freezer. But they use kind of Peltier heating and cooling. They have, monitorable humidity systems that'll keep track of humidity to within like a tenth of a percent. Timers, you can control them from wherever you are on Earth via the internet. It's pretty cool. On top of these two Memmert Eco, what's their actual name? Advanced Eco Peltier Technology HPP Climate Chambers. That's what they're called. On top of these two chambers, I have a dry ager, which I use for like salami. And if I wanted to mature cheese, there you go. It's kind of like a more simple version of what the Memmerts do. But it's also great if you just need to store something for like a month to let it desiccate slowly. Then I have two big double-doored pieces of equipment here, a fridge and a freezer, standard kitchen fridge and freezer, but it's no walk-in. I don't have space for a walk-in in this lab, but I don't need one, honestly. When I'm working with products, it's usually at most like 5 kilos at a time. That'll fit in one hotel pan, and you can fit a lot of hotel pans in both of these. I'll just open this up and you can see kind of, buckets of koji that I've had to make for various experiments. And then in the freezer, at least, there's a whole bag of yeast over here.
So they're mostly ingredients for the stuff you are working on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I have all my cultures, packed away in the freezer. I'll just read off some of the labels here. Experimental plantarum, tempeh cultures, firm pro samples, Pichia cliveri, koji, LB1, so on and so forth. Yeah. And then on the left-hand side, I have trials of soy tempeh that I've made over here. What else is in here? The last package of seaweed. I was working on a seaweed project for a while. And a bunch of cold packs and my ice trays. And in my fridge, it is pretty. And the funny thing is that none of this was for like any actual, I mean, it was work, but it wasn't for actual work. This is all the jars. I just opened the fridge and Agnieszka's looking at maybe a couple dozen jars of lacto-fermented pickles. Tomatoes, cabbage, turnips, different types of asparagus, radishes. I've got salted kumquats and lemons, and it looks beautiful. Funny thing is, this was all for either photo shoots or kind of like a what did we call it? Like an innovation day soiree. Like some of the big wigs had a big day of like VPs flew in from all the different regions of Christian Hansen. They came here to the headquarters, they had their meetings and stuff. Then they came here at like 5:30 to taste some of the things we've been working on that I cooked up.
You would give a tasting of that.
Exactly. So I held like a canapé party.
Okay. You look ready. It's quite many jars.
Yeah. And I fermented a bunch of vegetables and stuff in the style of many of Christian Hansen's customers. To have like a tasting. You know, we served olives from actual olive manufacturers and plant-based burgers from, you know, companies that were using our microbes to make some of these exact products. And the leftovers sit in my fridge, and sometimes I eat them for lunch, like I did today. Today I made a kimchi grilled cheese sandwich with a fried egg. So they did not go to waste.
Great.
Yeah. And then on the bottom is actually a perfect example of some of the stuff I work on. There's a whole tray of non-alcoholic beer that's fermented with some Christian Hansen species of yeast that are really good at making flavor without making any alcohol. And then this tray, this is in German, Erbsenprotein, soya protein, which is pea and soy protein. Yeah, and these are fermented meat alternatives that were made up at a factory that I had to taste and recipe test with. The funny thing is, like, I think each one of those blue tubes that you're looking at,
mm-hmm.
and it just looks like a tube of meat. You can't really tell what it is outside of the label. Those are probably like 4 kilos each, which is maybe 3 kilos. And when I actually have to like taste it and kind of judge where it's at, I'm eating like a mouthful. And sometimes, man, the waste in like industrial processes is just egregious. But, you know, they're working on like a factory line, and that's like the smallest version of something that they can make in a mixer. So I end up with lots of leftovers at times.
And on the top shelf, you have more like sauces.
Yeah, again, those are like condiments that I've had like leftover. Glazes for different things. You know, I made a mayo, like an umami mayo. Mustard, there's some chili crisp in there, so on and so forth. Yeah, my ongi was a really great batch of kimchi, actually.
Ah, that's great.
And then I also had to do up some desserts at some point, so there's like miso caramel in there that I have lots of leftover. It's so good. Oh my God. Wow. Get me started. And then over here, I have a double stack. This is like kind of the working kitchen. It's a corner of the room. I have double stacked combi ovens. I have my induction burner. Nothing complicated, you know, my little dish pit, my Hobart dishwasher. I didn't really want like a proper restaurant kitchen hood vent in the kitchen. I'm not doing that sort of intensive cooking. But because it's a big corporation, like the building manager was like, oh, you need one. You need a fire suppression system. I'm like, I really don't. I'm not going to be cooking that much. But there is a very fancy, like UV controlled hood system in here as well. Then I have my little wall of inspiration. I got these great shelves from Vitra. This is where I bring the color to an otherwise pretty, sometimes bland company. I hope I don't get reprimanded for that. But yeah, you know, my fermentation flavor wheel that caught your eye when you walked in, done up by Elisa Caffrey. I got my houseplants in here, all my succulents. You know, I have photos from Dasha Pelson, the amazing kind of microbial artist and photographer. I have some old photos that I'd taken at NOMA of some moldy ferments that I'd put on. Got my periodic table of the elements, a nice tapestry that a fan sent me, inspired by my work, and a bunch of ball and stick models of molecules that I love, whether it's ammonia or lactic acid or glucose. And then some random kind of, you know, chunks of dried store ingredients. Yeah. Those are made by Ren Boers, who is a Dutch ceramic potter master out in the Netherlands. And he has a really great company. He makes amazing crocs. He also makes wooden kiyoki. Ren Boers, though, that's his name. Down the hallway towards the entrance, I have my backpack machine, my speed racks, equipment for coffee tastings, because sometimes people from the beverage team work on that here too. I have a rotovap for experiments that were being run with an intern who was working on non-alcoholic wine. Then kind of along this southern wall, we have these big stainless steel shelves that house all my pots and pans. And then there's a bunch of white crates that I use to keep kind of the knickknacks and bulk ingredients. So there's like, out of three shelves, there's one kind of dedicated to equipment, pots, pans, mixers, Thermomix, Robocoup, you know, immersion circulators, styros, things like that. On the second shelf, we have all the ingredients. I have tubs for wheats and grains. And then a bunch of, you know, 1 liter and 5 liter containers for everything from yellow peas to soybeans to almonds and hazelnuts. And then again, the second shelf that has nitrite, xanthan gum, mannitol, locust bean gum, calcium chloride, carrageenan, iota. Who's behind here? Sodium alginate, ascorbic acid, tartaric acid. All the things that end up as E numbers on the back of
an ingredient label.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, so this is how they look. They look all alike.
They all look like white powder.
Yeah.
They all look like cocaine. And then on the last shelf is my plateware whenever I have to do tastings and all of my kind of prettier fermentation experiments, all the crocs. There's a year-old experiment where I took leftover tempeh and tried to make soy sauce out of it. Not as good as aspergillus, but it does work to some capacity. And then various forms of miso that I've put on for specific recipes. I was working on a project where I was trying to improve a huge food manufacturer's hummus. And my suggestion was, let's make a chickpea miso and fold that in at the end. And then they didn't opt for it because they're like, this is too much work, but I still have the miso. So there we go.
So these are like a long-term projects, right?
Yeah. And I mean, they're kind of on. It's kind of the same case at NOMA sometimes. You would have jars in there where you're like, how'd this one turn out? You're like, wasn't that great, but we didn't really take it off. We're just seeing how it develops.
Maybe it needs more time.
Yeah. It rarely ever needs more time. It's very rare that there's something that was on for like 3 months that you're like, I'm not sold on it. That is somehow mind-blowing at a year and a half. But occasionally it has happened. It happened to me here with Vichos. There you go. And my very limited library of fermentation books, which is just Sandor Katz's Fermentation Journeys and the NOMA Guide to Fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And one other, a Danish book. Because all my cookbooks are at home. And I've debated bringing them in, but I'm like, I'd rather have them at home.
Right.
Because they actually, you know, even though this is kind of like my professional kitchen playground, I'd never reach for any of those recipes here, you know? It's just not that sort of work. Maybe if this space became something else at some point, I would bring them all in. But for the time being, not so much. Then I have my little desk in the corner that just has one office chair, and that's where I sit at my laptop. And then in the center, I have a tasting table, which is where we've been recording this lovely conversation. Just a 4-seat high top made of wood, lovely oak veneer chairs or laminate chairs. And we have a beautiful view out to the forest and the birds are chirping.
It's quite solitary as a lab in a corporation.
It is.
Right?
It is. I am self-contained. And it does get lonely here a little bit. I mean, I do go across the street for lunch at the canteen. But, I mean, you see the labs at the main campus and they're in busy hallways and it's people popping out all the time. But here I'm kind of off my own little fermenty world. And I guess I have my microbes as friends.
Hanging out with microbes.
Yeah, they're not great conversationalists, though, but still.
Well, but it's a quite a presence.
You can definitely smell them. That's for sure.
You know that they are there.
Whether your tools are just a jar and a spoon, or a full gear including a precision incubator, in the end, it doesn't matter. Fermentation, as a form of change, can be induced in a variety of ways, but is only possible if it meets the right conditions. If you liked this episode, please share it. If you would like to know more about the show, listen to this episode again, or find previous episode, please go to fermentradio.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. We would love to know what you thought of this conversation, hear your human microbial stories, and your suggestions for the future episodes. We are always looking forward to hearing from you at hello@fermentradio.com. You can also leave us an audio message by connecting to us on our Instagram. Ferment Radio is brought to you by Super Eclectic and is supported by Microbial Lives, Practices of New Human Microbial Cultures, a project at the Center of the Social Study of Microbes. I'm very grateful for this support and most of all, with all our amazing Ferment Radio listeners. Keep fermenting and stay tuned for the next episode of Ferment Radio.